Welcome, everyone, to Making the Ideal Real. On this podcast, we showcase people who can help make you a more effective leader and a more effective person. Our guests provide you thought leadership in areas related to values-based living, goal achievement, or managing or influencing behavior. At Think to Perform, we help organizations and individuals improve performance by understanding these areas of values, goals, and behavior. This is your host, Ryan Goulart, and I'm committed to bringing you guests that will make you a better person, both personally and professionally. Our guest this episode is Michael Scott. Michael is the chairman and co-founder of Conopreneur Partners, a purpose-driven cannabis holding company. When assessing cannabis entrepreneurs, both Michael and Conopreneur take a values-focused approach in who they invest in, provide business strategy to, and leadership for. It is this laser focus and discipline that Michael uses that we will discuss today, and why it has made him so successful. One of the very first questions that we've always asked our guests is that, what does making the ideal real mean to you? So Michael, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, first two things that come to mind. I mean, number one, in a simplistic sense, I think of just goal achievement. But for me, I mean, I think of, you know, I talk about this often. It's the decision of living life deliberately versus reactively. And if you're not careful, the world can have you kind of following its train tracks versus your, you know, the train tracks that were meant for you, you know, that is connected to your passion, to your purpose in life, et cetera. But yeah, I think it's a great quote. I love that you guys have that.
Yeah. And I mean, you've been in various capacities working with Think to Perform. How totally. Has the Think to Perform message kind of influenced some of the thinking that you have?
Honestly, Doug Lennox specifically, I would tell you has, I'd say he's been the single most influential mentor I've ever had. He has, without a doubt, changed my life. And it started when I was 23, when I first started Ameriprise, when the leadership team gave me this little tool called Woody Whiffy. And I know Doug was the guy that really brought that to the company. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I attribute a fair amount of my clarity in life, my focus in life, and the success that I've gotten to and learning goal achievement. I think that is, it truly is, as Doug talks about, it's a habit, right? It's a process, and it can be learned just like other things.
Yeah.
And it has absolutely changed my life. In fact, I think when my wife and I first started dating, we were probably like a month in. I'm like, hey, she must have thought I was like a dork, because I was like, hey, let's do Woody Whiffies together. Let's, you know, I want to share with you my goals and your goals, and we can like help each other reach them, right? So like, but honestly, yeah, Doug has changed my life. In fact, you guys must love being able to have access to him the way you guys
do. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he does a great job of being able to digest things into very simple, very concrete ideas.
Absolutely.
So, and what it's interesting is you bring it up, like when you learned Woody Whiffy as a 23-year-old and to where you are now, having gone through a cycle of in financial services and now into your new venture as entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And where you're a guy with intent, you're a guy with intention, you do things very deliberately, as you just articulated. Mm-hmm. How does that mindset helped you as an entrepreneur where you want to go? Like, how does that all fall into place for you as you kind of do things where you're being observant, looking at things that as a need might be there? How do you address that through that clarity?
So, you know, I started my career in financial services, and what I realized, you know, as I was setting goals and doing different things with, you know, the broker dealer that I was with, what I started to realize is that really I'm an entrepreneur through and through. And that's to the core of my DNA. That's really who I am. And so, you know, when I look at, you know, and being an entrepreneur, you look at a marketplace and you look at what are the gaps in a marketplace, right? So, and those gaps are also the core source of where you can provide the most value. So, for example, when I was, you know, running my wealth management business, one of the things that was near and dear to my heart was helping families that have a loved one with mental illness, right? It you know, existed in my family. My mother has mental illness, numerous. I know the impact that makes not just on her, but also the family. And, you know, I started getting really active with NAMI, which is National Alliance on Mental Illness. I became a board member. And what I realized is, hey, one in four families has a loved one with mental illness. One in five people will experience some type of mental health or mental illness condition, you know, over a relatively short period of time. And then what I realized was it created a whole set of different financial needs and circumstances that these families need. And so I learned how to fill that gap in the marketplace. And that was one of the things that helped my business grow at bigger than normal rates. The same thing I saw in the cannabis industry. So I saw an amazing opportunity. I live in Massachusetts. It happened to be the first state that went fully legal, both medical and adult use, on the East Coast. About a year and a half, 24 months before that went in motion, I studied the industry, I was reading about it, and I thought, wow, this stuff, there's real undeniable medical value. We were misled as a country, really from our politicians. Mm-hmm. And now the data is finally coming out that it's undeniable, the benefits. And so I saw an amazing opportunity, despite the stigma, I saw an amazing opportunity where I saw, geez, there's gonna be businesses that wanna come to market that are actually gonna make a positive impact to society, but because of the stigma and the federal status, there's a big gap. So when there's consumers that want a product or a service and they can't get it, well, that's where the opportunity exists. So mm-hmm. what I was able to do is kind of fill that gap in the marketplace. So I found a way to bring capital to these businesses. And then also with it being a very nascent, new up and coming industry, these entrepreneurs lacked basic business knowledge, how to run a business strategy, et cetera. So I was able to fill both of those voids and satisfy, you know, a big part of my passion in being an entrepreneur. But yeah, I mean, that's really what I do is, you know, try to find gaps in the marketplace and opportunities and fill them through mm-hmm. a product or a service, essentially.
What made you gravitate more towards the medical side of cannabis versus the retail side?
Yeah, good question. So I actually almost didn't get into the industry because what I said to myself, well, let me back up. I'll give you a little bit of the story, right? So in January 2016, I think at the time I had six or seven businesses, but my core business was my wealth management business. But my partners were in a position to run the business. They wanted to take on more responsibility, and I wanted to continue to expand as an entrepreneur. And you know, for a lot of my 20s and most of my 30s, I was really a workaholic. And so I took an opportunity. I said, you know, things are going well. I've done pretty well for myself. I decided to take a year off, take a sabbatical. And in that year off, I wanted to grow personally and I wanted to grow professionally. And on the professional side, I said to myself, I'm going to find the most explosive industry out there to try to get into where the win would be in my sales. And so two things I studied professionally. I studied billionaires and what they do. And then I studied the most explosive industry. So it was undeniable it was cannabis. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, I actually felt pretty confident that the next tech boom that we're going to see, it's going to be in cannabis when this hits the U.S. markets. And, you know, the other side of it was the billionaires. And I figured out how I could mix the two. I studied numerous billionaires and I saw a repeat theme. And the theme was they knew how to take money and people and leverage and mix those three things. And what they do is they will get involved with, you know, different industries and create an ecosystem, so to speak. And they make money on multiple verticals around. And so I saw this opportunity in cannabis. And now to get to your question, now it's December of 2016. It's the end of the year. And I got to make a decision. I'm going back in my wealth management business. Or am I gonna make the leap and jump into cannabis? And so here was my dilemma, though. It was actually a moral dilemma. What I said to myself at the end of the year was, I don't know how connected to my purpose or passion owning a bunch of liquor stores, right?
Right.
And so what I said to myself was, well, geez, being associated with a bunch of, you know, adult use dispensaries would kind of be like that. You know, so I had an issue there. So I was kind of like, I was very intrigued by the industry. The entrepreneurial component was very appealing to me, but that was an issue. And then something happened. My mother was visiting, and, you know, as I mentioned, my mother suffers from numerous mental illnesses and PTSD happens to be one of them. So if you understand PTSD at its extreme level, and you hear about this with soldiers that have been deployed, they can't stop the negative thoughts in their head. And at its worst level, they commit suicide, which is, you know, horrendous. And my mother went through the worst PTSD episode we'd ever seen. So she was actually at my one of my businesses. She was actually at my gym. And I could tell something wasn't right. You know, she wasn't herself. And so my brothers were there. I was there. We were kind of watching over her. And then all of a sudden, you know, my brother comes running over on the other side of the gym, goes, Mom just quit breathing and passed out. And I run over and she's on the ground. And my brother describes that she just went catatonic, just kind of pretty much disassociated with the world, fell back and hit her head on the ground. And was not breathing for about a minute, 40 seconds. And so I'm there at this point. We're on the phone with 911. We're trying to get her to come to. And as the paramedics get there, you know, she snaps out of it. But because of her paranoia, she declines going to the emergency room. We don't know what to do, right? So we bring her back to the house. And, you know, again, PTSD, you keep the thoughts keep running through your brain. And so she's doing this and she kind of keeps working herself up, and out of desperation, my brother's not, we don't know what to do, right? So she won't go see somebody. She won't go to the hospital. She's at my house, and my brother Daniel looks at me and says, Mike, why don't we try weed, man? Because, you know, we hear about how that helps with anxiety and PTSD or whatever. And I said, out of desperation, I didn't know what else to do. I go and grab some cannabis. I give it to my mom. Now, my mom is at the time probably 65, 66, right? And it'd probably been 40 years since she'd ever tried anything like that. And but she takes it. I said, Mom, just try this. You know, a lot of people are saying this is great as a medicine. Ryan, I am not exaggerating. It was less than 5 minutes. She went from a total emotional wrecked state that my brothers and I are worried about, you know, the worst case scenario of suicide, to, I'm telling you, not just baseline. She went from within 5 minutes, that state, to baseline, to uplifted. She actually felt upbeat. She snapped out of it. She looked at my brothers and I and goes, oh my gosh. It was like she just realized what happened. Mm-hmm. She went, I can't believe that my grandkids saw this. Where are they? I got to give them a hug. I got to tell them I'm okay. She was running upstairs and she, you know, just starts hugging my kids and it was tearing up. My brothers and I look at each other and we're like, wow. We literally, my brother goes, marijuana is a miracle drug. I looked at him, I said, it sure is. And then I started really reading about, you know, what it was doing with people that suffer from anxiety, which, by the way, today is it's the most dominant mental health concern there is out there. And it's growing because of social media and all these other things. But when I started studying and reading about the medical benefits of cannabis, and then I started realizing and reading that in Israel, they're like a decade ahead of the U.S. on the medical research of cannabis. And I'm seeing that it helps. I'm talking a long list of ailments, you know, not just cancer, PTSD, but a long list. But what I'll tell you, Ryan, is when I saw that happen with my mother, box was checked. I saw how it was connected with my purpose. I could clearly see the direct line of, I can get into this industry and make a positive impact, a compelling positive impact to society. And so within 3 weeks of that event, I researched the most dominant cannabis law firm in the country. They were on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, Vicente Cederberg. And I met them. I retained them. You know, they said, this is our retainer. It was not cheap. And I said, I want to meet the entrepreneurs that you guys give advice to in Massachusetts that are looking for two things. Help with business strategy, and capital. Because I'm ready to bring both those things to the table. I'm ready to dedicate some serious time to this industry. I went back and talked to my wealth management partners. I said, guys, keep running the show there. This is what I'm going to be spending my time and energy doing. And I jumped into this industry 2 feet in. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought 2.5 years later I would have sold my traditional wealth management business. And now it's 80% of my time, and it's been nothing short of explosive, absolutely explosive.
That's everything we had talked about before that story, and now being on the other side of it is so compelling. the amount of clarity that you had to be one observant of what was occurring. And then also just again, the intentional clarity and focus that you have to be able to narrow in on those two things that you can provide context and advice for. So, which isn't actually all that dissimilar to your role as an advisor, which is kind of cool.
Now I give advice on cannabis private placement investments, whereas before it was more publicly traded investments. Yeah. Now, I now find publicly traded investments a little boring, you know, really and truly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're actually becoming, we started out as just a cannabis holding company. Now we're actually becoming a multifamily office holding company that's registered as a RIA.
Interesting.
And so that piece is being added to the business now. And, but no, had you asked me 2-3 years ago, if this would be, you know, a big, big part of my focus, I never would have thought it at all. And I might add, within my first 2 years in the industry, and this is kind of proof to what I'm saying about if you find a need in the marketplace, right? And let me just tell you, there's a screaming need. How many times in history can we say the consumers wanted something so badly, whether it be medicinally or adult use, that they did it even though it was federally illegal? Right. I mean, just think about that for a second. Right. I mean, so there was a huge demand in the marketplace, but people stayed away from the industry because of the federal illegal status. But a bigger reason would be the stigma. Right. And so Buffett's famous quote is, when investors get greedy, I get fearful. When investors get fearful, I get greedy. Investors have been fearful to tiptoe into the cannabis industry for quite some time because of the federal status and the stigma. That is changing at a rapid pace, an absolute rapid pace right now. And I will tell you, this may sound hard to believe, and I had quite a successful wealth management career. I added more to my family's net worth my first 2 years in cannabis than my previous 18 years in the financial services industry. It's been that explosive.
That's incredible.
It's been crazy.
Yeah. How do you then, as like, so you're assessing these entrepreneurs that are coming to you for business strategy, capital, what role does values play in helping you disseminate the good from the bad, the ones that are worth your time and the ones that are not?
Yeah. So we, you know, we tell businesses, we don't just bring capital, right? So you can go to private equity for that or the VCs. So we delivered three core things. Capital is part of it, right? So it's capital, it's business strategy, business guidance and knowledge. And then the third thing is purpose-driven leadership, right? So in that leadership component, there's got to be an alignment from a values component. And so that's why we put it on our footer. We're very clear about it. And so when we vet these businesses, we actually, part of our vetting process, believe it or not, the values tool, that's actually part of it, mm-hmm. right? So yes, we're going to look at a business's track record or the entrepreneur's track record of success. We're going to look at their background, make sure they're clean, et cetera. We're going to understand their core values. So we go pretty deep, you know, to really make sure we're aligning ourselves with the right businesses mm-hmm. in the space.
And then to your point about stigma too, because that's people say cannabis, they think, that's just the correct term for weed.
Right. And then, you know, the picture, the image of stoners comes to mind, right? So I really think the industry has gotten a bad rap, Ryan. So, and if you go back in history, hemp was like the largest crop, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like it was huge. You know, cannabis was legal. And, you know, I think it was the Nixon administration, if you follow the history, where they put out this thing called the Schaefer Report. And essentially, it was a bunch of BS. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff came out around the time of Reefer Madness, that whole movie. And Doug was telling me how in college they forced them to watch it. And it was such a joke. You watch it now, it's comical. But we were fed a bill of goods by the politicians, you know, that had their own axe to grind. Only now is the real data coming out. So I think the cannabis industry really got a bad rap, right? No different than alcohol. There's alcoholics mm-hmm. that don't know how to be balanced with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that go out and every once in a while they have a drink.
Yeah.
And I think that when you compare cannabis to alcohol side by side, oh my gosh, you get a bunch of dudes together that smoke weed and they might start a band. You get a bunch of dudes together that drink too much and they're fighting. Mm-hmm. Right? Right. You compare the negative side effect list of cannabis to alcohol and it's like a much shorter list.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, you might get the munchies and fall asleep.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean?
Hey, listeners, Ryan here. Throughout this episode, you hear Michael refer back to and reflect on his values. His values are family, integrity, helping others, leadership, and loyalty. These values are values he chose through an exercise we use to help people discover who they would ideally like to be. And it is a core exercise to everything that we do here at Think to Perform. If you're thinking to yourself, I wonder what my values are, we have an online exercise that is free that you can use to discover them. Go to thinktoperform.com and click on our approach to access the exercise. So even then, just like, so we have the stigma, we have the history of what marijuana has been in this country. And then we have this new, fast-growing, exciting, and probably dangerous industry growing up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate that with this preconceived idea? How do you navigate this Wild West industry and trying to, again, make sure you're partnering with the right people and doing the right things?
So I think that's why it's really important to be centered on your purpose and your core values. And the work that I've done with Doug and Think to Perform has been a huge help with that, right? So I'm very clear on my core values, right? And I take it a step further. I prioritize my core values because sometimes in life, you can have a decision where it's pulling you in different directions based on different values. But if you prioritize them, it becomes a little easier to make that critical decision. I am far from perfect, Ryan, but I can tell you every single day I try to improve as it relates to my alignment with these five core values. And that's family, integrity, leadership, loyalty, and helping others. And since I identified those values years ago, there's only been one change. Excellence used to be my fifth value, and I found it to be almost counterintuitive to me for me to be overly focused on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I made that my sixth value, and then I moved helping others to my fifth. But I think in this industry and in any industry, you know, number one, if you're clear enough with your core values and your longer term purpose, I think it helps you make better decisions. But I'm going to tell you one thing that I did notice is that the cannabis industry has this way. If you're used to going at 80 miles an hour in business, all of a sudden you're doing 140 in cannabis, right? Because of the uncertainty, because of the regulations, because of the explosive. In the cannabis world, there's a gold rush happening.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the green gold rush, but there's a gold rush happening. And so what happens is everyone just starts running faster, you know, because of that. And one of the things that I saw myself actually losing sight of over the course of the last 3 years was I started sacrificing accuracy for speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden I was overly direct with some of my business partners or whatever it may be. And it's been recently that I've said, let me dial this back. You know, let me get back centered to my roots. And that's why I'm doing more work with Doug and Chuck, et cetera. But it's been very helpful, though, for me to enter into this industry in the right way, because my focus, I see how I can make a positive impact to society through the medical side of cannabis, through the education. But the other thing is, you know, we're what we call a profits with purpose business. We think it's very okay to make a lot of money while also giving back to society. In fact, that is a big part of my long-term focus, is I have this belief, this concept, I call it a philanthropic business. Right. And so basically, we've already developed the foundation. We plan to fund it in the next 3 to 6 months. And the idea is, as successful entrepreneurs grow in wealth, the idea is to take a certain percentage of profits from all the various businesses, dedicate it into a foundation, and do good things with it and give back to society. My belief is, as an entrepreneur, I have a couple of beliefs about entrepreneurs. Number one, I don't think our politicians are going to fix things in this country, right? Let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
They're a big part of the problem. However, I think that entrepreneurs play an amazing and can play an amazing impactful role in sparking change in this country as it relates to the people that get behind them, the jobs that are created, But if you become wildly successful as an entrepreneur, I believe you have an obligation to give back to society. Society helped elevate you to where you are.
Yeah.
Right? You made a lot of money from all those consumers. Come on, give back. You know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation made it cool to, when billionaires die, half of their wealth, you know, basically goes to different charities and foundations. And that's great. I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But here's my one dilemma with that. I think of money as energy, right? And if you think of it in that regard, there's all these billionaires sitting on billions and billions of dollars, sometimes hundreds of billions. Mm-hmm. And that energy is not getting unleashed and used in society. So with my idea, I would love to be a catalyst for many other entrepreneurs to be funneling money into the right types of foundations that are not just about giving money, but actually about making change, you know, about going out there and saying, geez, let's do something about these politicians. Let's create some term limits. Did you know, Ryan, that 40% of the food in this country is perfectly edible, ends up in the trash? 40%. And there's homeless people and there's starving kids out there. Doesn't make sense. This is the type of stuff that I think entrepreneurs can actually solve. So the cannabis industry is going to catapult me towards that vision, because the amount of wealth that I see that can be created in this industry, it would have taken me 10 times longer mm-hmm. than other industries. So I look forward to that, very much so.
That's so cool. And I always like to wrap one of these podcasts up with more of a future-oriented question. And it's always hard to prognosticate, like, well, Ryan, in 5 years, this is going to happen. And, you know, all of that's well and good. And my reality testing is, as we were discussing earlier, very poor. So my head's in the clouds often. But as it relates to just what you see here in the present and how you can extrapolate that into the future, what are some things that, either from a behavior standpoint, a cannabis standpoint, some think to perform standpoint, whatever you think, where your mind goes, I'd be curious to learn.
So I'm going to quote Rick Aberman, right? So I did some good work with Rick. Mm-hmm. I've worked with Doug. I've done some work with Rick. The world has a way of overly focusing on what society thinks of them. And I think that's a bunch of bunk. What I think is, if you're clear on who you are, and one of the things that Rick taught me, there's a huge difference between being internally confident, knowing who you are, your core values, your focus in life, versus being externally confident. See, externally confident, I need to know that I got this grade. I need to know that I hit this milestone of net worth. I need to know that this person says I'm pretty, right? That's external, right? But if you don't need that external validation and you get it internally yourself, it's so much easier to block out the noise. Mm-hmm. You know, do you think I would have gotten into cannabis if I was overly focused on what society's view was of me? No way. No way, right? So I'm doing what I'm doing because I'm much more internally confident and focused and clear. So what I would say is, man, we need more internally confident people in this world. You know what I mean? It's not about what society or social media says is cool. It's like, hey, you know what? You've got goals. Let's go out there. Let's find a way to actually achieve them. And chances are the reason why you're not hitting the goals is probably because of you. Mm-hmm. And so if you're willing to look within yourself, you know what I mean? If you want to look within yourself and be honest with yourself and say, oh, wow, yeah, okay, maybe I can fine tune this and this. Next thing you know, that's how true internal confidence is built. I recognize this issue in myself. I fine tune it. I achieve this goal. Great. Now let's do it again. Now it's something a little bigger. Now it's a little bigger. I think that's how real internal confidence is built. And I think we need a lot more of them in this world. Mm-hmm. And I think the billionaires, man, here's the thing with the billionaires, right? So I spent a lot of time in my sabbatical studying billionaires. I could boil it down to they do three things really, really well, right? They basically, they leverage people and money and then business opportunities, right? That's what they do really, really well. And I think the billionaires in this world can do a lot more than politicians can at this point. When you look at how many billionaires there are now versus 10, 20 years ago, I mean, the landscape has changed. So what I'll tell you is, I believe there's going to be a point in time that these entrepreneurial billionaires come together and can make a very significant, meaningful impact to society and do it with their wealth, or AKA their energy, mm-hmm. now versus when they're dead.
Yeah.
Because half the value is them. It's their minds, right? Entrepreneurs are wired to find solutions and make shit happen.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Thank you so much, Michael. This has been fantastic.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Making the Ideal Real podcast. If you'd like to contact us to learn more about what we do, contact us at info@thinktoperform.com. You can also engage with us online by liking us on Facebook and liking us on LinkedIn.